All right, welcome in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, Friday, June 24th. Excited to be with you. Back at it. GMAC going to be out today. We got a lot to get into, a lot to talk about. Busy sports day yesterday. We got another busy one coming up today. Ole Miss moves on to the College World Series final. Another just outstanding performance from Dylan DeLucia. We'll have Barstool Mincy on at 9:20. Talk about that one. The big news yesterday, Arch Manning decides that he has committed to Texas. And wow, just a massive, massive, massive get for Steve Sarkisian, for Texas, and really everybody involved. And we talked about earlier in the week that his best friend had decided to commit to Texas, and we kind of looked at it and said, is this the most important three-star recruit that we will see in this recruiting cycle? And some people kind of thought that that was laughable, not a big deal. But Will Randall, a tight end from his high school, when he decided earlier in the week to commit to Texas, that a lot of signs began to point to Arch Manning would then also go on and commit to Texas. He does it yesterday. And that moves the needle. That gets people going. That's that is something that is going to change the narrative for a lot of things around not only Texas, but the Big 12 for a minute, and then the SEC and other players that are involved. PGA Tour making some noise with what they're doing. We've got USFL playoffs coming up this weekend. Jabari Smith goes third overall last night in the NBA draft. He is now, Damian, the highest player drafted in Auburn basketball history. And just right off the top, I want to get your thoughts on last night's draft. 1, 2, 3, your thoughts on maybe who got it right, who got it wrong. Paolo Banchero out of Duke is first off the board. He goes to the Orlando Magic. Chet Holmgren, second out of Gonzaga. He goes to Oklahoma City. And then Jabari Smith, third to the Houston Rockets. Now, we knew that it was going to be some mix of these three off the board with the first three picks. But now that you've seen where they've landed and you've seen the order, just what are your thoughts on those three right out of the gate?
Really and truly, the only question mark I have is for Chet Holmgren. I just don't – everybody has the same mindset, as I do. It's the size. It's the size. We know length-wise, he'll be just fine. But as far as the physicality and the weight that he's going to have to be, you know, bang around there in the block, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting for him to see if he can physically make that jump into the NBA. But I was a little shocked. I did think that it was kind of a landslide that Jabari is going to be number one. But the fact that, you know, he's falling, he's at Houston. Houston has a young core. They have a young team, and Jalen Green, a lot of those guys. He's going to be able to get his touches. He's going to be able to make an impact as soon as he gets on the floor. Right now, I would say that he's probably going to be looked at as like their main scorer, even as a rookie. And I think that for Houston, it's a slow building process. But I do think the future is definitely bright for those young guys. And I think Jabari is going to be a nice addition for that team.
When do you think the last time the Houston Rockets drafted a player that would turn into an all-star was?
Ooh, I'm guessing Yao Ming?
You have it right. That's on the money. Yao Ming, the last player that the Houston Rockets drafted that would eventually go turn into an all-star.
Wow.
I mean, that is crazy to think about. Now, we think about some of the big names that have played there. And you obviously, you know, the guys that obviously had amazing careers, James Harden, Chris Paul, you know, great players, but the last one that they drafted that eventually became an all-star would have been Yao Ming. And, I mean, that's just wild to think about with the great players that have donned that jersey and played for that franchise. But I was surprised to hear so many people last night on draft coverage and see on social media that they just thought Paolo was the impact guy in this draft, that he was the plug and go guy in this draft. Because I kind of look at it from a standpoint, and I'm with you. I have concerns about Chet Holmgren. I mean, I don't see how you wouldn't. You know, the guy looks like a twig, and you could easily sit back and say that you feel like he's going to get bullied, he's going to get pushed around, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be able to really handle his business, but he also has a perimeter game, and that's where the NBA is going.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, to me at least, Jabari was the pick, because he offers you defense at multiple levels. He's a good rebounder. He is a solid defender down on the block and up around the perimeter. And then he's got the perimeter game. I mean, how many 6'10 guys do we know that have his kind of perimeter game? So that's why I thought that Jabari Smith would have been the pick. I think Houston gets, I mean, if you want to say a steal at three, I guess you can. I don't know.
It's
like Jay Billis talking about Jabari falling to three last night. He's like, I don't think you really fall to three. I mean, your third pick in the NBA draft is pretty incredible either way. But, you know, that's, I mean, Paolo's got a little bit of perimeter game, but it's not like Jabari's. Jabari's got a smooth jumper. He's got a real jumper. He's got a jumper that I think a team can lean on, and he'll be able to find his shots. So you just think, too, about the NBA draft and what Bruce Pearl's done and just kind of how wild. I mean, Auburn's had first-round picks. It's not to say that it's never happened. You go back to Mike Mitchell in 1978, was drafted in the first round. Barkley was fifth overall. Person the next year was fourth overall. Those first-round picks, Chris Morris, fourth overall. And Jabari just snuck in ahead of those guys at three, which made him the number one, or the highest-drafted Auburn player of all time. But you go back to 2009 when Tony Douglas was drafted 29th overall. And that was even a transfer. But you look back at since Bruce Pearl has arrived. I mean, Jameson Brewer coming out of Auburn in 2001 in the second round would have been the last player drafted. Bruce rolls in 2019. Chuma Okeke, 16th overall. Isaac Okoro, 5th overall. Sharif Cooper, 48th overall. JT Thor, 37th overall. Davion Mitchell, obviously another transfer, but a guy that Bruce brought into Auburn, 9th overall. Walker Kessler goes 22nd overall last night. Jabari goes number 3 overall last night. It's also the first time in Auburn basketball history that they've had two players selected in the first round of the same draft. I mean, that is just wild to think about the abundance of talent that he's been able to bring in. Some he's lost, fair, but what he's done through the NBA draft, it's almost never been done before. Multiple things we're saying have never been done before. Highest player drafted, first time two players in the first round. It's just remarkable what Bruce Pearl has done when you think about just the talent and the guys that he's brought in, Damian, and just how much he's changed the entire narrative around everything Auburn basketball.
Yeah, and this is what you hire him for. You hire him to have this kind of impact on the culture that's, you know, like you said, made Auburn up the quote-unquote everything school. He has the basketball. Individually, he's having the talent, but collectively as a unit, you're seeing these deep runs in March Madness. You're seeing them compete year in and year out, winning regular season titles, SEC tournament titles, and things like that. This is what you build it for. And they gave him the time. They gave him, you know, everything that he needed, and he's doing exactly what you set him out for.
All right, so a lot to get to today. Phone line is going to be open. You want to jump on the Bud Light hotline, 800-239-9569. 800-239-WJOX. You can tweet in at Mac and Cube. That's always brought to you by our friends at Royal Buick GMC. Landers wants to chime in on Jabari Smith. Welcome into the show, Landers.
I appreciate it, guys. I believe I talked to y'all yesterday about, you know, throwback jerseys and stuff like that as well. So, like, my favorite team that I used to watch was the I am incredibly happy with Paolo Banchero. I wanted either him or Jabari. I feel like they're both very complete players, both NBA ready. I do feel like Paolo, maybe he went first because of the deep run Duke made in the draft or in the championship
NCAA tournament.
I don't know why I could not say that word. But that's probably where I would have went too. But I wanted y'all's opinion on who y'all would have taken first. On Bruce Pearl, I am a huge Alabama fan, but I agree with y'all. Bruce Pearl has done a great job over at Auburn. I do feel like Nate Oates has done a phenomenal job as well. He just needs a few more pieces or work out a few things. But watching SEC basketball now, to me, is like watching ACC basketball. It's getting that clout that it deserves, I feel like. But my question for y'all, who would be y'all's worst number one draft pick ever picked? And usually there's a phenomenal pick right after that at second. Mine would be Greg Oden going first and then Kevin Durant going second. And I'll leave y'all guys with that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'm assuming he's talking NBA. And quickly, Damian, talking throwbacks, did you see New England and
the video
that they dropped about their throwbacks this year?
Yeah.
God, they're so beautiful.
That's going to be nice.
Don't know why they don't do it every week, man. Just go back to Pat the Patriot. And it's just it's such a good-looking uniform. And just the jerseys, the stripes on the shoulders, the helmet, they're so clean.
They are.
And I just don't know why they don't do it every week. I mean, they're just, I think they're the best throwbacks in all sports. I absolutely love them. I'm probably a little bit partial to them because that was the logo we wore on our helmets in high school. But, man, they look good. And I love the fact that New England's going back to those old school unis this weekend. Biggest bust at one, I'm assuming we're just going NBA. Man, I mean, it's hard because you almost had that in every NBA draft of guy who was taking a couple slots behind. We just had this conversation with Steph Curry after he wraps up the title, right? That he was the guy that we couldn't believe that he fell where he did. Look at a couple of the guys that came off the board before him. So, I mean, here's the thing with Greg Oden. You know, Greg Oden had a microfracture procedure in his knee. And if he doesn't have that, I think he's going to be a good pro.
Yeah.
And maybe a really good pro. Michael Olowokandi didn't have any injury issues, and he never gave you anything. So I that's probably, I don't know if that'd be the first one that I would go. That's the first one that I think of. Who comes off the mind first for you?
I'm trying to think. Who was it? Was it 2000? Was it 2011? It was 1-2. I'm trying to think because Kyrie Irving went number one that year. So it was Derek Williams that went. Okay, yeah. I was thinking it was Derek Williams, then Kyrie Irving, but it was Kyrie Irving, Derek Williams. I can't think of one just right offhand, that, especially not in the NBA. Just because, I mean, the NBA is just so – it doesn't
really
matter
where
you draft.
I really think you could do it. I mean, you're referencing 2011, right?
Yeah.
So I think you can do this in the – I think you can do this in the NBA every year. Almost every year. I mean, obviously, you can go to Jordan's draft, and that's it's ridiculous, the fact that he might have taken ahead of him. And you go to their careers, and you can look at what happened. So I think you can almost do this – in every single NBA draft. So we'll go to the 2011 NBA draft. Kyrie Irving won. Okay, who is, I mean, you can say what you want about what he says, how he acts, what he does. Kyrie's got a title. Kyrie's been a really good basketball player.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really deny that. So, I mean, Kawhi Leonard went 15. That's ridiculous.
Klay Thompson was in that draft.
I mean, Jimmy Fredette went 10. He's getting ready to play in the basketball tournament. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Yeah. That shows you. Yeah, that shows you, man. I'm telling you.
I mean, think about the guys that went. Yeah, so, Kyrie, fine. Think about the guys that went ahead of Kawhi Leonard, Enes Kanter, Tristan Thompson, Bismack Biyombo, Brandon Knight. I mean, Kemba Walker had a really good NBA career. You mentioned Klay Thompson, Jimmy Fredette, Alex Burks, Markieff Morris, Marcus Morris. So, yeah, there was. I mean, that one had – I mean, Jimmy Butler was drafted 30th in that
30th.
Draft. Jimmy Butler. He's probably top 10 player in the league right now and has been for a few years. So, yeah, I think you're going to get you're going to get an egregious pick or two in almost every draft. So we'll go back to the one that I was referencing, 1998. Michael Olowokandi comes off at number one. Antoine Jameson, fourth. Vince Carter, fifth. Dirk Nowitzki,
ooh,
ninth.
Ooh.
Paul Pierce, 10th in that draft.
Ooh,
Rashard Lewis came off at 32nd in that draft. So, yeah. I mean, I think you can almost do it every single year in the NBA. Josh in Huntsville wants to talk some NBA. Welcome into the show, Josh.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Great. How are
doing
you?
Doing well, man.
I just wanted to say I'm a huge Auburn and NBA guy. And I will be going to the Houston Rockets first game to see him play. And I don't think it matters where you get picked. I think it's the development and the team that develops. And I believe Paolo Banchero will be really good. I just don't think the Magic will be able to develop him like another team would.
Is that based on Magic history? Other elite talent that they've had, or?
Yeah, I believe it's based on that because the only player I can think of in the past 10 years that they've developed well is Vucevic. Other than that, I just don't see it. But I just think that Jabari is more NBA ready and it's going to get the Rookie of the Year unless it's Jaden Ivey of the Pistons. But that's my opinion. I just wanted to hear what y'all think.
No, it's an interesting thought. I mean, Vooch had a nice career and did some good things in Orlando. I mean, you've brought in, you know, a slam dunk champion. You brought in a player from Croatia that didn't live up to the hype. You know, you brought in a guy coming off an ACL and Chuma Okeke. They've had a weird draft strategy. And I think some of that has been where they've drafted. You know, once you get outside of the top five, I think things become a little bit dicey in the NBA draft. We went through a couple of drafts there that you feel like you know. I think once you get outside of probably three, Damian, more so five, six, even though it's a lottery pick, nowadays you're still kind of, okay, G League, foreign, one done, sit out of your high school. And you're rolling the dice on a lot of these guys.
So, yeah.
Orlando's just taking a weird strategy on some of the guys that they've taken, and I don't know if it would have been on the franchise to actually develop them. I just think they were guys because they didn't go anywhere else and work out. I mean, if you wanted to go T-Wolves and Wiggins didn't work out there and he goes somewhere else and works out, I mean, okay, maybe. But it's not like those guys from Orlando have gone other places and end up being superstars. I mean, Aaron Gordon's been okay, but I mean, he's a dunk guy. It's what he is. He's a vertical, high-flying dunker, and he's not going to be a great NBA player. That's okay, but you know, based on where you took him, maybe it doesn't really level out.
And that's the thing about basketball. Like, in basketball, much less in football, is so much you get drafted on potential. Like, we go back and you look at Devin Booker, a guy that didn't even start when he was in Kentucky, and arguably is a top 10 player in the NBA right now. It's all about, you know, the opportunities and who, like you said, who develops you while you're in the league. And, I mean, he had to suffer through Phoenix. Like, he dropped 70 points in a game, and they still lost. So, I mean, somebody that had to, you know, really grind it out. And especially in the NBA, it's all about – a lot of it's just chance. A lot of it's just chance, and there's so much room for basically boom or bust. Because if you're not the guy that's going out there averaging, you know, 25 a game, you're kind of looked at as, oh, well, you're not living up to your potential if you were drafted, you know, number three overall. Whereas in the NFL, you know, there's quality linemen that get drafted in the top 10, and they'll have long, you know, very long careers or extended careers, but they may never get the prominence that they may deserve.
All right, so you mentioned Devin Booker. It brings you to an interesting question. And we're going to talk to John Parker Wilson about Arch Manning on the other side of the break that we have coming up. I caught some heat on this last night on social media. I tweeted out that Kentucky had now had a first-round draft pick in the last 12 drafts. 11 of those drafts, by the way, 11 of those drafts, they've had two players selected, at least two selected in the first
at
round.
At least
now,
two.
It ends up working out because Ty Washington goes 29th overall in the first round, so it doesn't really matter. But I ask you this question, and I want to hear back from our listeners. We'll get a Twitter poll going on this as well. Should Kentucky get credit for Shaedon Sharpe being drafted? Yes or no? Now, if you followed Kentucky, Shaedon Sharpe did not play. There was some back and forth between he and Cal. Knew he was going to come in, not play. Wanted to play. Didn't want to play. Thought he should be playing. Agreed to sit out. Agreed to not play. Enters draft. Not going to stay in draft. Stays in draft. Gets drafted 7th. And, I mean, literally did not. I mean, was never even in contention to play, depending on who you listen to in Lexington. So going back to what you said about Devin Booker. But he was in uniform. We saw him warm up. Like we knew he practiced. I mean, Cal talked about him helping them be better because of how he's going to practice. Should Kentucky, because this is the wild part about it. You would think Kentucky fans would want to take credit for that. I mean, because we have – this is the argument that this kind of spawns from is college football fans that still claim the guy that went to another school.
Exactly.
Because like, I don't really think Florida fans, a lot of them really tried to claim Cam. But, like, there are Ohio State fans that will claim Burrow. Oh, we built Joe Burrow. We made him. Look at the other guys there. He just couldn't get on the field. They were all better. Man, he's still an Ohio State guy. He said he loves Ohio State. I mean, it's like if Billingsley catches 100 balls this year, you don't think there's going to be people saying built by Bama?
Oh, of course. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. So Shaedon Sharpe got 0 minutes this year. Zero. He logged a donut in the minutes column for the Kentucky Wildcats. So I ask you, Damian, does Kentucky deserve credit for Shaedon Sharpe being drafted?
I don't believe so. But like you said, like he has zero game experience. Zero. It's all practice. And yet he still goes top 10 overall.
We're talking about practice.
Practice. Not a game. Not a game. Not the game that he put all his blood, sweat, and tears for. The game he died for. Not a game. We're talking about practice. And yet he goes number 7 overall to the Portland Trail Blazers.
So you say no. Okay, listen, he was enrolled at Kentucky. He was on the team.
Okay.
So I think Kentucky gets credit. I think he went to school. Kentucky player.
So he went to school there. He took classes there.
Yeah, and then maybe we go Cardale Jones and say, you know, he didn't
yeah, we didn't come here to play school. Like, he didn't do that. He didn't come there to play school. He came here to play ball.
He played practice. So, but he's gonna play a lot of different things because his bank account's gonna be big being drafted 7th overall.
Yeah.
Greg in Athens, quickly before we get to our first break. Welcome into the show, Greg.
Yes, sir. This has been going on for a long time. You know, in 84, Hakeem Olajuwon goes first to the Houston Rockets. Sam Bowie from Kentucky goes second to Portland, ends up to be a bust. And then Michael Jordan is drafted 3rd by Chicago.
Yeah, and you can't – I mean, listen, nobody's going to be mad about the dream. I mean
– no.
Dude's got multiple titles. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest centers to ever play in the NBA. Now, Michael Jordan's Michael Jordan. So, yes, a lot of and it's interesting that you brought up the dream because a lot of people do focus on the Sam Bowie part of that. But, you know, I mean, that's MJ's MJ. No, you're never going to be excused from that. Houston and Portland should never live that down. You passed up on the greatest basketball player that we've ever seen. And, yes, that was egregious. But you can't truly be mad at the Rockets for taking Olajuwon because of what he did and what he accomplished.
Not at all. And, I mean, when you think, like you said, one of the guys, when you think of footwork and literally anything he wanted to do down there on the block, he did on both ends, defensively and offensively.
I'll do you one better from the same draft. 16th overall, John Stockton out of Gonzaga.
Goodness gracious.
Taken ahead of John Stockton, Terrence Stansbury, Michael Cage, Jay Humphries, Tim McCormick, Kevin Willis, Leon Wood, Otis Thorpe, Lancaster Gordon, Alvin Robertson, Melvin Turpin. We're not going to be mad about Charles Barkley going 5th, but
no, not at all.
I mean, just once again, it's every draft in the NBA. You're going to find a guy that's down around 10 or outside of 10. And you're going to be able to look at. I mean, Jerome Kersey went 46th in that draft. Now, I'm not saying Jerome Kersey is a Hall of Famer, one of the top 50 players to ever play, but Charlie Sitton, Danny Young, Tom Sluby, Willie White, Jay Murphy, Steve Burt, Stuart Gray. Those are guys that went ahead of him. He had a pretty good NBA career. It's going to happen. Almost every draft, it's going to happen. So, all right, get to our first break. Arch Manning has made his decision. For now, he is committed to Texas. He has one tweet and one Instagram post, and that is announcing that he is headed to Texas. Former Alabama quarterback John Parker Wilson with us next to give us his thoughts right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, 7:28 a.m. It is Friday, June 24th. Appreciate you tuning into the show. Listen online, jocksfm.com. The app is in your app store. iPhone, Android, you can download it for free. Also, tell your home smart speaker to enable the Jock skill or just listen to Jocks and you can tune into the show that way each and every day. As we roll along here on the show, you've heard me talk about my friends at Royal Automotive. Multiple lots to choose from, which means they're going to have the inventory that you desire, the inventory that you're looking for. They've helped me out with vehicles over the last few years as I've been here on WJOX. And they're going to have 4 dealerships on one lot. Means whatever you want to drive, they're going to have it. Where else can you find 2022 GMC Sierra, Yukon, Buick Enclave, Volkswagen Atlas, Volvo XC90 all right there in one spot? Not to mention Royal selection of hundreds of pre-owned models. Royal Buick GMC, Royal Volkswagen, Royal Automotive Pre-Owned, Volvo Cars of Vestavia Hills. They've got your next car, truck, or SUV. You can reserve a new model in under an hour. It can be that fast. They'll even deliver your new ride right to your driveway. How convenient is that? You already know where to find the fine folks at Royal. Corner of I-65 and Highway 31 of Vestavia. Online at royalautomotive.net. Remember, for every ride, there's Royal. For every Friday, there's a John Parker Wilson. And he joins us each and every week thanks to our friends at Craneworks.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it. Craneworks, Rentalworks, yeah! Big dog's got it.
John Parker Wilson on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it. The big dog's got it. Now, John Parker Wilson.
All right, John Parker, when you heard the news of Arch Manning committing to Texas yesterday, what were your immediate thoughts?
I thought he was going to go to Georgia. So I guess I was a little surprised. Of him going to Texas. I mean, I don't know why I should have been surprised. You know, Texas was,
I think probably leading the whole time. But, you know, after we got the commitment, you know, what was it, last month, I mean, you look at where Georgia's at compared to where Texas football program's at. I think they were, what, 5-7 last year? I mean, Georgia's at a different level than they are right now, but I guess Arch wants to take the chance and go try to rebuild that program with Sarkisian, which I think was probably the biggest deciding factor for him. After everything I've read, seems like they got pretty close throughout recruiting, and I think in a day where it's a lot of name, image, likeness, and we're talking a lot about a lot of different things, I think relationships matter. At the end of the day, I think that's probably what it came down to.
When you look at what that might do for the rest of the Steve Sarkisian tenure, especially in recruiting, we've seen how kids will jump on board a certain class based on who else is already committed. Here recently, it's one thing that's really changed about recruiting than when you and I were recruited. You and I had big windows in between when we were recruited, but nowadays it's, guys are recruiting one another. And once one guy commits, all of a sudden it feels like there's a big opportunity for other guys to hop on board. How much do you think this changes the rest of this recruiting class and other recruiting classes for Steve Sarkisian in Texas?
I mean, I think it's massive, and you're right. You know, when we were getting recruited, and not even too long ago, it was a very personal decision. You know, everybody's got their favorite school, but then you want to go to the best school where you can get a chance to play and try to make it to the next level. But, things have changed. And I think, obviously the social media probably has a big impact on that, where guys are closer, they're more connected when they're in high school. You go to a lot of national camps, a lot of national recruiting things. So you see these guys, you might be from Alabama and you see a guy from Louisiana every other weekend, right? Or a kid from Tennessee or South Carolina. So they're more connected and they're closer, and I think it's going to have a huge impact because, you have the ability now to form – to pull a LeBron James and D Wade and Chris Bosh and say, hey, let's do this together. Let's go rebuild Texas. We can, if you can pull it off and you can go to Texas, you'll be a hero there forever if you can turn this thing around. So, for Texas, it's massive because Arch Manning is the biggest recruit. In the last few years, I don't know who would be bigger than him in the past, couple, just because of his uncles, but obviously he's a huge talent, so he's going to get a lot of attention from other high school guys. And Sarkisian's going to use this to his advantage too, of being able to say, we got this huge recruit. And I think it's important for him also that this happened during the summer, right? This didn't happen in late December. Now Sarkisian can use this the whole offseason to go recruit these seniors in high school.
So, going back to either you were in high school paying attention to recruiting, being recruited, or since you've been outside of Arch Manning, whether they panned out or not, who do you recall as being the most hyped recruits you can remember from anywhere? Doesn't matter. Just who do you feel like was the most hyped recruit coming out that you recall?
I recall Chris Leak. I forget, he's from South Carolina, I think. And I feel like, because I was probably like a freshman or a sophomore in high school, had no idea if I was going to get recruited or what was going to happen. But I remember him being on like the cover of the recruit magazines, and like, this was probably, before recruiting got huge, but, recruiting was starting to pick up and become more and more popular. So I remember him. And I think personally,
Charlotte.
Closer to home.
He was from Charlotte.
Yeah. There you go. I was close. Julio Jones.
That was a big one.
He was huge because, right, it was Saban's first recruiting class. Kind of like what Arch is doing right now in Texas. Julio came in at a time where we were 6-6 the year, maybe 7-6. We won the bowl game. So we were 7-6 coming off that year. And he came, and obviously when he came, we got other big recruits. So I think for the Alabama program, Julio was huge, but just the college landscape, I mean, he was kind of, I would say, the first, from my memory, just mega five-star recruit where, it's broadcasted on ESPN, it's all over the internet, like it became a, a, an event signing day was. And to me, my recollection is Julio. Obviously, I'm majorly biased in that, but Julio was he was a big get for us.
Now, I know we haven't, none of us have really sat down and spoken to Arch. Like, we don't know him. We feel like we have somewhat of an idea of what kind of kid he is. I mean, he gets on Twitter and Instagram only to tweet his announcement. That's his only tweet. So it's not like he's living and dying on social media. It feels like kind of the way that he took his visit sort of did it the right way. You mentioned the relationships a little bit earlier. The fact that a guy who was, by some outlets, ranked as a higher recruit than he is coming out, is going to be in the same position room with him and Quinn Ewers. Do you feel like that he has that demeanor, that attitude to go in and maybe sit a year if Quinn Ewers were to stick around? And that might not be problematic just because of, like, I feel like because of his last name, he has every, most people would probably fall into the trap of having a giant ego and being a little bit arrogant there. But for some reason, that family, he feels like that he's just a little bit more even keeled than a lot of recruits in his profile. Do you think that gives him some advantages of being able to go in and say, you know, hey, you can talk to one of his uncles and like, hey, I sat out for a year. I didn't go start right away. It's going to take a little while. You got to learn first. And that might aid him in going in and helping his career at least early at Texas.
Yeah, completely. I think from what I've seen, he's got a pretty good demeanor about him. Haven't seen a ton, but I think, you know, it's an advantage of having experience, and maybe he doesn't personally have that experience. The kid's not, you know, he's a senior, and he started a senior in high school yet. He didn't personally have experience, but his family does. You know, his dad is brothers with Peyton and Eli that have been through it. You know, he's been with them the whole time and understands there's ups and downs, there's waiting, there's pressure if you do have to go out and start as a true freshman, right? So there's goods and bads to where, you know, there's different scenarios to where he's going to be. But just having that experience in the family and the ability to mentally process what's going on and not, you know, we've all been there. You get back to your dorm room and you're like, man, you're trying to figure out what the coach is thinking. And you know, I had two less reps today in practice than I did yesterday. So maybe, you know, I'm getting benched. I'm never going to play again. So these things start going through your mind, right? Where it's natural, and, you know, he's going to be able to have somebody to talk to and understand that, hey, you know, things change, and it's a long process, whether you're the starter, whether you're the backup. You know, I think, you know, if it was me coming out, I'd want to be the backup for a year and then get to go play the next year, just so you don't have, you know, you have the time to develop, you have the time to learn, you have the time to figure out what it is like to play big-time college football, which is completely different than high school. I think the biggest jump is from high school to college, not college to the pros, just because the learning curve is massive. And you know, he's going to have the experience of his family to rely on.
Tom Parker, always great catching up, man. Definitely appreciate it. And as we know, each and every week you're brought to us by our friends at Craneworks.
Yeah, appreciate it, Cole. And Craneworks, with offices Birmingham, Mobile, and Nashville, Craneworks is the Southeast leader for crane and equipment rental. Give the big dog a call for your next lift, machinery moving, or rigging projects. And don't forget the Rental Works division with all of their qualified operators for their aerial and earth moving equipment. And Waste Works USA, which can meet all your residential and commercial roll-off dumpster needs. So check them out at wasteworksusa.com or the whole lineup at craneworks.com.
Appreciate it, John Parker. We'll catch up next week, man.
See you, Cole. Happy Friday.
Same to you. John Parker Wilson joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. He's with us each and every Friday. Thanks to our friends at Craneworks. When we come back, Arch Manning is going to be playing offense, but he'll be playing against some SEC defenses down the road. We covered the SEC West earlier in the week, but when we come back, SEC East defenses, who will be better, who will be worse this upcoming season? We'll discuss it right after this on McElroy and Kubelik in the Morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the Morning, 7:45 a.m., Friday, June 24th. Some breaking news outside of college football. We're going to get to college baseball a little bit later in the show. Barstool Mincy going to join us at 9:20. Talk Ole Miss and them heading on to the College World Series final. First time that's happened. But it looks like one school going to have a new head baseball coach, as Florida State apparently finalizing a deal to make Notre Dame's Link Jarrett their next head baseball coach. Notre Dame's had a couple of really nice years. Link Jarrett's done an amazing job. Deal's expected to be finalized shortly. Press conference scheduled for Monday. We'll talk more Arch Manning. I want you guys to begin to think about the most hype recruits that you can recall coming out of high school, and whether they panned out or not. Just the guy who you feel like had the most hype ever that was coming out. I got a couple good ones. I know Damian will have a few as well. You'll be able to chime in. We'll talk with Joe Cook, who covers Texas for On3 Sports at 8:20. Just get his thoughts on what all this changes for Texas and how big of a deal this is for Steve Sarkisian, the Texas Longhorns, now that Arch Manning coming in, and then what that quarterback room is going to look like. But we want to talk defense first. Arch will be facing some Texas or some SEC defenses during his career while he's at Texas. And one thing I agree with what Landrum said earlier in the show when I was listening to you guys on Morning Jocks is that I don't see Arch transferring. I think this is a decision. Now, I don't know about a four-year decision because, man, there will be people in his camp. There are people in his camp that left school early to go to the NFL, and I don't think they're going to tell him not to do that. But, you know, wait it out, maybe wait and see, maybe wait your turn. I don't think it's going to be something for an issue for, say, a year for Arch Manning. And, you know, we'll see how we'll get a lot more clear picture of that when we see Quinn Ewers this year and how he operates and what he looks like as the Texas quarterback. But we'll get to that a little bit more next hour. SEC defense, we ran through the West on Wednesday. And if you want to go back, grab the podcast of that, you can do it at jocksfm.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get yours. We went through the entire SEC West. Better, worse on defense this upcoming season. Now, Florida, a team that just right off the jump, I'll go ahead and tell you, a couple guys that are not going to be on the roster anymore. Mordecai McDaniel, Finley Graham, defensive backs, and Chris Thomas Jr., defensive lineman, all from the 2021 class, they are no longer on the team.
That's the best of starts.
That's it. Billy Napier didn't go any further. and I find it interesting there are certain people that cover Florida that are saying that those players have been cut.
Cut.
Now, like, not Billy Napier's words, but just people who cover the team.
Right. Which,
That's a word that we've begun to sort of throw around a little bit when we talk about guys being employees and different things like that.
Yeah, right.
We know when new coaches come in, they need to make moves, and they need to get guys out. Trust me, I've seen it. I lived a coaching change, and there were guys that were essentially told to go home. But, that'll hurt their depth a little bit. This Florida defense, though, you look at last year, it was such a conundrum of just what was happening. They finished 7th in the SEC in scoring defense, 49th nationally. Now, they finished 4th in the SEC in total defense. What? Just spitball. Throw out where you think Florida finished nationally in total defense.
I'm going to say...
Just give me a number.
I'm going to say 65.
They were 15th.
In the nation.
In total offense. 51st in total defense.
Oh, okay.
So I'll throw you a little curveball there.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
8th in the SEC in total defense. They were 85th nationally in rush defense. 10th in the SEC. Not necessarily Florida football standards on the defensive side of the football.
Nah.
Now, this is one that I actually look at. Now, Patrick Toney's a guy, he's young, a brilliant defensive mind. Now, he hasn't called defenses a lot, but he's got Sean Spencer there to help him. So, I actually think that just... not being that over-aggressive style, not going out of your way to be super pressure-happy, blitz all the time, crazy formations. I actually think that gives them a really nice chance to just flat-out be better across the board. Then you look up front, Kevon Dexter is a guy we've been waiting to come around. He did a little bit last year. Brenton Cox is going to be one of the better edge defenders in college football. He's going to be back. Obviously, he's made a lot of plays. Ventrell Miller, a linebacker with a ton of experience. You got a big 400-pound defensive tackle that's going to be back in there, really 420, that's going to give you a couple reps a game. He's not a couple series, but he'll get per game.
I say he's 400.
He'll fill it up every now and then. But you got a ton of guys that have played in your secondary that are going to be back. So you got good numbers back in the secondary with a coaching staff that's just flat out not going to be as high risk. So, and listen, this is a numbers game that we're playing. When you're 73rd nationally in scoring defense, 51st in total defense, 85th in rush defense, it's not going to be super difficult for you to be that much better. But for me, Damian, I'm going to say that I think this Florida defense is absolutely going to be better than it was a year ago.
Yeah, and I agree with you, everything that you said, especially on the part where I don't think this Florida defense is going to take as many risk. You're going to be bringing pressure from everywhere like Todd Grantham did last year. And it's like, I'm starting to think that Florida's going to take that Billy Napier style. Like, if they want to have the success that they really want to have, I feel as though they're going to take the identity of what Coach Napier's bringing.
Well, that's what he does. Culture. That's his big word.
Exactly.
And it's from the top down. It's everybody being on the same page. And that's just, he kind of forces that on a program. I think the other good news is, and listen, when I say this, I'm not saying that I don't think some of these offenses are going to be good, because I do think some of these offenses will be good. They're not going to play a ton of super high-powered offenses this year. Like, is Tennessee going to be able to move the ball? Yes, absolutely. Could A&M be able to move the ball? Yes. Do we think that they're going to be top 10 in total offense? No. Like, Georgia might be good on offense, but they're not going to be super high-powered on offense. South Carolina might be able to move it, but they're not going to have all the weapons to be overly dynamic. Kentucky's going to be good. They're not going to be super dynamic without Wandale Robinson. Utah's going to have a solid offense, but they're not throwing it 50 times a game. So you look down that list of offenses they're going to face. I mean, hell, Eastern Washington might be one of the most dangerous offenses that they're going to play this year.
Yeah.
South Florida's not moving the ball. Missouri's not going to have a great offense. I don't think LSU's offense is going to be that good. They got offensive line issues. Vandy's not going to be great. Florida State's offense not going to be too good. So all of that said, I think Florida's defense takes a big step this upcoming season, and you seem to agree. So one that I think is going to be another easy task, we probably don't need to spend a ton of time on it, is Georgia. 10th nationally in scoring, or I'm sorry, first nationally in scoring defense, first in the SEC, first in the SEC in rush defense, second nationally in rush defense, second in the SEC in pass defense, 13th nationally in pass defense, first in the SEC in total defense, second nationally in total defense. First off, it's almost impossible to be better than that. Just like with the numbers. Right. I don't really know how else to state that. But when you finish nationally in the four main categories of defense that we keep track of, first, second, 13th, and second.
You're good.
It's almost the only place you're going is down from that standpoint. And we know everything that they lost. You plug Will Muschamp in for Dan Lanning. Kirby obviously going to have his hands on it. I think, yes, Jordan Davis. Yes, and Kobe Deem. Yes, Devontae Wyatt. We know the number one pick in the draft. We get it. But I still think they're going to be good. But there's no real need in spending a ton of time on this. They're not going to be as good as they were last year. They will take a step back this year.
Yeah, and it's no knock on – it's not – their fault. It's just like, listen, we're not expecting you to have another legendary defense over this coming up fall. Like, it's just, it can't happen.
And think about, they're going to play some experienced quarterbacks that some people, like Oregon, they're probably going to get a quarterback they've seen a few times. Samford, you get air raid, but you should be able to handle that. Yeah, South Carolina, you'll get a good quarterback. Kent State, you're going to experience quarterback. Missouri, Auburn, don't really know what you're going to get. Vandy, don't know what you're going to get. Florida might get the super talented guy. Tennessee, you know what you're going to get. I mean, Mississippi State's going to be able to throw the ball. Kentucky brings back a guy that people think is going to go in the first round. So they will face some good quarterbacks. Now, what all is around some of those quarterbacks? Don't know if that leads me to believe that it's just going to be that much better, and that's going to force that defense to completely just go backwards. So I think Georgia, an easy one if we're just talking about kind of where that defense is going to finish compared to a season ago. We'll finish that up when we come back. Arch Manning on the other side as well. We got Joe Cook, who covers Texas recruiting for On3 Sports. He's going to be with us at 8:20 and just talk about the totality of Arch Manning committing to Texas, what his expectations are for Texas this year, and then when they come into the SEC in a couple of seasons. And we'll keep wrapping up our discussion around SEC East defenses. Kentucky, Missouri. How are they going to look? Tennessee's defense, South Carolina's defense. They're going to be better next year than they were this year. some new coordinators, some new players in, out. We'll continue that discussion on the other side right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Keep it locked online, jocksfm.com. Apps in your app store, search WJOX. Tell your home smart speaker, just listen to Jocks, and we'll be back talking SEC defenses next right here on Jocks 94.5.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.